You won't pick the right causes for reaching happiness. Okay. If you don't understand their emptiness, you won't be able to select the right causes for reaching happiness. What's the best way to get a good understanding of scripture? What's the best way to sharpen your intelligence? Not me. No. Well, Guru Yoga's a pretty good shot. most importantly, keep your morality. It's very interesting. Buddhist scripture says that the more you are immoral, like Benjamin Franklin said, what was that? Something like, I don't know, virtuous people don't always end up pretty, but non-virtuous people always end up ugly. according to Buddhism, the more you break your morality, the more stupid your mind becomes. Your IQ actually drops in this life. Okay. The more you are immoral, the less you'll be able to understand anything properly. Okay. Especially the deep teachings. Okay. If you really want to see them properly, keep up a good ethical way of life. Now, what about where are all these connections stated? Where am I going to learn about these? That's the function of the Vinaya scriptures. This is the function of the Jataka tales. This is the function of the 16,000 pages of the scriptures, which talk about, if you do this, you get this result. If you do this, you get this result. Why do you have to go to scripture for that? You can't figure it out. You can't figure it out. Nagarjuna said it's real bad luck. What? One thing. When you squish a bug, your own ribs don't start to break at that moment. You know, it would be very convenient if, as you squish a bug, your own leg bone went, you know, and just broke into two pieces, you know. And then nobody would squish bugs. These people in New York wouldn't always be coming to Michael Roach saying, "It's okay if I kill the roaches in my house," you know. You know, they're really a problem. They wouldn't be asking the question. Okay, if every time you lied to somebody, your tongue felt like acid. If every time you took advantage of someone financially, your own bank account suddenly dropped. Okay? I mean, life would be easy. We would all have reached Nirvana a long time ago. But Nagarjuna says, it's too bad there's this time gap. Okay? There is this time gap. There's a time gap between the two. And the connection doesn't seem to be true. Okay? Let's get back to emptiness. When the sun comes up in the morning, what's happening? Okay, we all have this experience of the sun. It's a communal karmic rising, okay? We all have this experience of the sun coming up. Is the sun coming up?
No.
Is the sun coming up in the morning? Are we going around and the sun therefore coming up? No. Is the sun coming? Bad answer. Really bad answer. Come on. Huh? We are projecting the coming up of the sun. Okay? I don't know how many billions of people on this planet. 5 billion? I don't know. 5 billion people at the same time are projecting a sun coming up. Okay. And when the sun moves across the sky, what's really moving? Your projections. Okay? Your projections. Okay? Really. Really. Stop thinking of events as happening outside of you. It's not true. A sun which could come up in the east and move across the sky for the whole day, external of yourself, is the gotcha. It don't exist. There's no such sun. Okay? Money that comes to you without being generous doesn't exist. Okay? The question is not whether you make a risky investment or a safe investment, is it? It's, are you generous or not? With understanding emptiness, Are you performing the perfection of giving with an understanding of emptiness or not? It makes life pretty weird if you live out your whole life this way. Okay? How are you going to get your car to run right? Help other people's cars. It sounds, people are giggling because it sounds weird. It sounds weird. How are you going to be healthy? Care for other people's lives. Okay?
This rocky road didn't come from this like harsh word.
Both probably. Okay? Probably both. But that's a good point. I mean, I didn't say it would work in this lifetime unless you do it with extraordinary motivation, okay? Does that mean you shouldn't do it this way? What's the choice? What I'm saying is there's no choice. But the road doesn't get fixed by calling the county. If you do call the county, does it always fix the road? Therefore, this is not the cause of the road getting fixed. Please. Okay? Forget the thing between good investments or bad investments. Forget the thing about being persuasive to the county or not being persuasive to the county. If you're persuasive to the county and it fixed the road, what happened? Your harsh speech karma wore out. If you're persuasive to the county and they don't fix the road, your harsh speech karma didn't wear out. Okay? Get used to it. Live by it. Live by it. Does that mean you shouldn't call the county? No. Okay. Still, does it mean if you didn't call the county, someone would come and fix the road anyway if the harsh speech karma had worn out?
Right.
Yeah, you don't have to call the county. Right. Where did they come from, please? Here's a real Svatantrika. Here's a real Svatantrika. You know, the causes are independent. The supporting causes are independent. The telephone call is independent. I understand, you know, that's the old Svatantrika raising their head again. Think about it. Why do I do fundraising? It's probably an ignorant act, I guess. By the way, I mean, let's say I don't go out and raise funds, or I don't go out and try to raise money for property and two big houses on that property. You know, 96 acres of prime Connecticut real estate. And I don't go out and seek it. Okay? I don't make any phone calls. Could I ever get it? Would it be possible that one of my students would meet a girl in a bookstore and mention that Michael Roach is looking for monastery ground? And she says, my auntie is looking to give away 96 acres. And it just pops in my lap. Is that possible or not? It happens. Okay. It happens. No, I know. I know. But what I'm saying is that, I mean, observe the money that comes to you. I mean, lazy people get rich. People that work hard don't get rich. Some people that work hard get rich. And some people that work hard don't get rich. And some people that don't work hard get rich. And some people that don't work hard don't get rich. It's the truth. It's the truth. This is not what's causing money. I mean, what's his name? Marx and Engels. They said that the source of all money is the earth. All money comes from the dirt of the ground. People grow crops. They sell crops. People sell it for houses. They buy lumber. Somebody makes iron from the earth. You know, they said the source of all wealth is the ground. It ain't that. The source of all wealth is generosity. That's the truth. The other things don't work all the time. So they're not the cause. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't work. I always talk about the famous diamond deal example where you lie to the guy and you make an extra $50, okay? Where did the $50 come from? I was generous in the past. If I had not lied to the guy at the critical moment in the deal, would I still have gotten $50? Would have come from somewhere. I would have found it on the street. Somebody would have cut the tax rate. So, you know, there would have been a mistake in my bank account. It still would come. That's what I'm trying to say, okay? And you under that, you can act on this if you understand the Diamond Cutter Sutra. If you understand how projections work, you will see what even the lower schools of Buddhism couldn't see, is that even the causes for things are not self-existent. Your resistance to my talking all this stuff comes from believing that the causes for wealth are self-existent. Okay? Think about it. Okay? I mean, that's the last thing I have to say. That's the last class. That's the last thing in the last class. Think about it. I'm saying that ultimately, even if your understanding of emptiness gets real, real good, you get stuck like all those lower schools, 3.5 schools of Buddhism over 2,500 years, you will get stuck on believing that the causes for what you're trying to get in your life are self-existent. You are grasping to them as self-existent. They are not self-existent. They are also projections. Okay? That's the whole point.
So the giving is also...
The three spheres of giving are not self-existent, and you cannot perform a proper act of generosity unless you understand that also. No, you don't have to be a Buddha. You just see the emptiness of the three spheres. You see the emptiness of your boss screaming. Okay, I'll answer questions for a while. Okay. Bottom line, last thing you remember from that neat course that we had, that guy got up there, and after saying a lot of reasonable stuff for a whole week, he proposed that the logical outcome of that whole class was to say that if you want nice things to happen in your life, you must respect the laws of karma. And that was Nagarjuna's mantra. Okay. Last question, then I'll take Chris. If you want to go to a place where every single detail of that world causes absolute bliss to you, which is the definition pretty much of a Buddha paradise, okay? According to this idea, what kind of non-self-existent causes will you have to collect? What would cause, and let's talk about the difference between two different paradises. In one paradise, only 50% of the objects give you bliss. Okay? It's like a half paradise, half baked paradise. Okay? Only 50% of the objects give you bliss. Like the top of the pole gives you bliss, but when you look at the bottom of the pole, it doesn't give you bliss. Okay? Seriously, alright? The top of the stupa gives you bliss, but the bottom doesn't. The people on the left side of the audience look like tantric deities, but the people on the right side don't. Okay? What's the cause of that? It means that your virtues have not been performed towards every living being. Okay? They have not been performed for the benefit of every living being. You only perform them towards half. Alright? And now we get into compassion. I didn't talk about compassion for 5-6 days. We didn't talk about compassion. We didn't talk about it. And this is where we get into the immeasurables, the four immeasurables. Okay? Your deeds and your motivation, as you do your good deeds now, if you don't want a half-baked Buddha paradise, they must be done with the intention of helping all living beings. Okay? It's the only way to get a full-baked paradise. Okay? Your good deeds must be done with the intention of assisting every living creature. Those you can see around you and those you can't. P.S. Don't get into this trap of working for all sentient beings and ignoring the ones right around you. Okay? You can't do your good deeds towards every sentient being. Okay? You can't feed every single sentient being. You can't comfort every single sentient being. You have to work with the representatives of every sentient being, who are the hardest ones. Your family, the other people at your Dharma center, the people at work. They is all sentient beings. Okay? They is all sentient beings. That's as close as you're going to get. They are representing all sentient beings. Okay, so do your good deeds towards them, to the people around you, and imagine or have in the back of your mind that I'm doing this for all living beings. Because you and don't be one of these idealistic people, you know, saying I'm doing this for all sentient beings, but I don't like this guy at my office, you know, and it won't work. If you keep that up, you'll have a paradise where, you know, where you have bad breath, you know, or something like that, you know. I mean, who wants that? You can't leave anybody out, or else your paradise will not be perfect, okay. And it won't be paradise. Okay, question. Yeah.
You said yesterday or the day before that the very best thing that we can do for all sentient beings is to move ourselves towards good of it.
Absolutely.
And,
yeah.
We also talked about Buddha being in his own paradise, where everything is wonderful. Could you elaborate on the ways in which that Buddha is then in a position to help all sentient beings? And how does this seem sort of in a state of play?
I'll say it with reference to emptiness, okay? I'll say it with reference to the direct perception of emptiness at the path of seeing. I'll speak from the point of view of the direct perception of emptiness at the path of seeing, okay? What's the difference between learning it from someone who's seen it and learning it from someone who hasn't seen it? Okay? What's the distinction? What's the difference? You can smell the difference. You can sense the difference. You know the difference. You intuitively know the difference. That's a difference. That's a difference. Okay. Next question. Yeah. Technically, out of seven steps to develop compassion or ultimate compassion, equanimity is the kindergarten. It's K. It's K of 1 through 7. There's an instruction on how to develop bodhicitta. And the first step is called equanimity. And that's to, at least you don't hate anybody or dislike anybody. I mean, I often try it on the bus. You know, I have a nice 2-hour bus trip home every night. So I'm thinking, it's human nature to like 3 people in the bus, to be attracted to 3 people in the bus, to be repulsed by 3 people in the bus, and when you get home, you can't remember the 3 who were sitting behind you. You know what I mean? Which is, a prerequisite for getting bodhicitta is called tangyom. Say tangyom. Tangyom. And that's where at least you feel similarly towards all 9 people in the bus. You know, which is not human nature. Human nature is, if you move to a new Dharma center, where hopefully all the people are more reasonable, within 1 month, 1/3 of them will be bad, 1/3 of them will be nice, and 1/3 of them you won't care much about, either way. If a guy comes to teach Dharma at your center, and he doesn't stay more than a week, he's really good, you know. He's really nice, you know. If he stayed more than a week, your own mind would start to say, yeah, but he does that thing, you know. And, you know, that's why I only stay a week, usually. And I'm not kidding. I'm really not kidding. If we were together all the time, your mind and my mind would start to see faults. And that's not a function of the external thing. That's a function of us. And you can't help it. It's like that. Yeah. Absolutely.
Or is it depending on how many people coming in?
Both. But those who experience the road the most will have the most purification to do. Okay? Seriously. And start thinking that way. It's true about everything. It's true about anything you want in your life. Start thinking that way. She said, when His Holiness came and they asked if he had one piece of advice, he said, the one piece of advice I have is pave the road. And then she said, well, maybe the best way to get the road paved would be to go in the Gomba, all the people, who should we get to do the purification? Whose harsh speech created the rough road? And the answer is, anyone who rides on it. Okay? If you ride on it a lot, it was a lot of harsh speech. If you ride on it once in a while, it was a little harsh speech. But in either case, you have to purify it. If those who live here purified the deed of harsh speech by being very careful about speaking about each other badly or to each other badly, would that be enough to fix the road? I think that was your point. Or would those who... Yeah. or would those who visit occasionally also have to participate? And would the road not get fixed would the road not get fixed until those stragglers came in and did their purification? Seriously. Yeah. The answer is this. Once the road is fixed by the purification of the people who use it most often, what you're asking me is, if we want the glass to be all water and no blood or pus, what do we have to do?
Tell us
exactly what to do. Yeah. Study the Lamrim Temple. Very seriously. There's a section about... Jetson Kappa makes it very simple. You know, it's not more than 4 or 5 pages. And he gives a whole analysis of what causes each part of your environment. You know, why did I, on 39th Street and 9th Avenue in New York for 3 years, have to have this garbage container outside with rotten fruit in it? You know? No, seriously. Sexual misconduct. In my past life, or even in this life, okay, that created that stink. Why did the guy come up and offer us a nice brownstone in the wonderful East Village? We wore out the karma. Okay, we wore out the karma. That's the truth. Okay. No, I know you're asking me, and I'll give you this answer. If you're having trouble at your office, and there's people at your office who really push your buttons, and finally it reaches this point where you say, or at your Dharma Center, where you say, I just can't stand it anymore. You know, I gotta move on. I gotta leave this situation. And you move to a new situation. Think carefully. Don't jump to conclusions, okay? At the new Dharma Center, say New York. Okay? No, because we get this come up. People say, I'll come to New York and everything will be fine. I said, don't count on it. You know, okay. There's two choices. Will there be another irritating person there who pushes your buttons? Or will there not be another person there who pushes your buttons? You tell me. Excellent answer. Lexo, Ricky Pura. Excellent answer, okay. If your karma has pretty much worn out by that time, you will be happy at the new Dharma Center. If it hasn't pretty much worn out by that time, which is normally the case, you will replace that person with another person almost immediately. And you know that. Okay. What it means is, when you get set up with one Dharma Center A, and move to Dharma Center B, to escape the person who pushed your buttons, you are grasping to the self-existence of the person who pushed your buttons. That action is being generated by ignorance. It's the typical action of a person who doesn't understand the Diamond Cutter Sutra, who never got a class on it. Okay. Yeah. It's just the same answer. Sometimes it's worn out and sometimes it hasn't.
Okay. When you go around doing things,
You tell me, have you ever had a bad backache or a bad headache, and you are praying like anything that it would go away? I mean, there's no, in your mind, all you can think of is pray. I wish this thing would go away. I really, really pray that this headache, and I've had one, you know, recently, like that, just torture. You know, I pray that, and I want this thing to go away. Does it make it go away? No. It just doesn't. If you, now, question, if you take a pill and it goes away, did the pill take the headache away? No.
You can go into it.
Okay? No, it wasn't the pill. It wasn't the pill. Why not? What's the proof of it? Because sometimes you take a lot of pills and nothing happens. Okay? Wake up. Wake up. I mean, it's obvious. Okay? Oh, no.
No?
I agree that there are things called cooperative causes, you know. Meaning, you know, normally, if you want the car to keep going, you got to put gasoline in it. You know? Like, gasoline is a cooperative cause. And you could have some excellent car-going karma. But if you ain't got gas, would the car still go? You know? The answer is somebody would give you another car or something like that, okay? But no, you still have to respect. I can't lie. You have to have the karmic causes. The gas is also a karmic cause. Okay? And if you didn't have, if you had the karmic causes to project a moving vehicle and you didn't have gas in it, it would still go, and this is why miracles happen. Seriously. This is why someone can walk on water. Okay? It's totally possible. Okay? It's completely possible, according to the laws of emptiness. Mm-hmm. Entirely possible. Forget those contributing causes. A guy can walk on water.
Okay.
It's totally possible. To see that happen would require great goodness on your part. To see it happening to yourself would even require more goodness, but ain't that the point? We want to reach that point. You will reach that point. One day, there is a thing in Zen, there is a samadhi in Buddhism, where that water can be hot as earth and you can walk across water. Okay. No problem. Excuse me?
Woman in the back.
Okay. Your arm is tired? Here's my answer. Listen. What time? Seriously. Here's my answer. Listen. What time? She asked me, if there was nobody on earth, would the sun still come up in the morning? And I said, what sun? Seriously, this is a classic, perfect answer. What sun? Then that's a collective perception of a bunch of animals. That's fine. No problem. Oh, we're talking any living being. Then I say, what sun? No, we include them among sentient life. We don't draw a distinction between animal life and human life. Okay? We don't draw that distinction. Yeah.
I understand the impression that you have infused emptiness into the situation of your boss yelling at you. But then you also said, how do you infuse emptiness into helping an old lady across the street?
Yeah.
When
you
do a good
deed? Yeah.
How do you do that?
She says, what about, it's easy to talk about how perceiving the emptiness of the boss might help you. You do not want to perpetuate that event. So you do not respond with anger. But how about virtues? And she said, how about helping an old lady across the street? You definitely then stop and help old ladies across the street. Okay? First of all. Secondly, you wouldn't grasp to the self-existence of helping an old lady across the street. And the implication is that you would clearly understand that by helping this old lady cross the street, in the future you will have a healthy and beautiful body. Okay. As you're doing it, you know it. How do the Buddhas keep Buddha paradises running? Okay. Remember we talked about using up karma of having a teacher, for example. You know. How does a Buddha perpetuate a Buddha paradigm. Quite consciously, quite knowingly, they perpetuate them. I understand the emptiness of this paradise that I work so hard to get to. I will continue to do an infinite number of good deeds with infinite numbers of emanation bodies with the intention of helping infinite numbers of sentient beings in order to perpetuate this paradise, which is pretty cool, and I want to stay here. Okay? And they go through that, and they do it. No problem. Is it artificial? Yes. Is it real? Yes. The thought is spontaneous. It's true that they're so trained in that they're no longer thinking of it consciously. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I asked my Lama the same question because he used to send me out to mow the lawn. Okay. She said, what am I supposed to do, like, if I have to clean up a trash can? I know there's lots of ants in there, and I know it's likely that I'm going to hurt some. Or even when you get in a car. I mean, you know it's likely. The minute you turn on the ignition, you know it's likely that there's going to be two rows of squish bugs all the way down the Rajapani Rocky Road. Okay. What do you do? What can you do? It's not considered a bad deed. If for example, you have to go to the store for a certain reason, and you know, and you're aware that certain bugs might get killed as you go to the store, the power of that bad deed is very small. There is some bad deed. But you don't get in the car with the intention. You don't say, I'm going to the store so I can kill some bugs on the way. You know, I mean, the intention is not to kill bugs. If you kill some life incidental to another activity, it is bad karma. You have to try to minimize it as much as you can. That's why monks traditionally had to carry around a sieve. They were supposed to sieve the water before they drank it, so they wouldn't kill any small beings in the water. And there's a Vinaya rule that before you take water out of a stream, you take the most compassionate monk in the room, you say, you go wash the stream for half an hour and see if there's any small creatures, you know. So you can't be frozen, you know. It's not like you can't go anywhere, or you can't walk to the bathroom or something. Or it's not like that. But you have to minimalize it as much as you can. There is a mantra that you can say. My Lama used to tell me, blow it on the blade of the lawnmower. And I'll just say it for you. It's Om Kirta Ragana Hum Sri Soha. Okay. Om Kirta Ragana. I don't know if I can. I hate to write it. I'll write it, but it's... it's actually at the end of some editions of the Diamond Cutter. Who did? Say it again, Angelica. Say it again. Say it again. Say it again. Let me hear. Say Om Kirta Ragana Hum Sri Soha. I don't know if it's completely, totally correct spelling. It's at the end of some editions of the Diamond Cutter Sutra, by the way, which is cool. Let me ask you another question. How does a mantra work? Okay. And we were talking about it during the break with somebody. It's very interesting. The way a mantra works is covered in the second chapter. I'll give you a choice. Root tantric text, Lamrim, Perfection of Wisdom, Buddhist Logic Book. It's in the Buddhist Logic Book, okay? The last place you would expect it, Pramanavartika, second chapter, Dharmakirti. It says, why do mantras work? And it's surprising, okay? It's surprising. It's not what you would get. two conditions must be present. Two conditions must be present for a mantra to work. Condition number one, the person who first spoke it must be a holy being. Okay. The person who invented it must be a holy being. Condition number two, the person who's trying to use this mantra to gain some holy effect, like helping the bugs who get cut by the lawnmower, must be keeping an ethical way of life, must be following an ethical way of life. Okay. That's really cool.
You don't actually have to
believe in the mantra necessarily? Didn't say that. It didn't say that. It said only those two conditions. Obviously, I don't think you would go around saying it if you didn't believe it. Maybe it's assumed. Okay. Two more questions, and I think we have to... you're not going to get much of a break, I think. Yes, anyway.
Often, people write in for pujas to be done. And what's going on there when they ask for, I hope that my grandmother is better. I hope that my business goes well. Do this kind of puja, do that kind of puja. What's going on there? I mean, if their karma is going to ripen for that thing to happen, then how can...
Right. Anila asked, what's the use of sponsoring a puja? Say somebody's hoping that their business will go better or that somebody in their family will feel better. How does that work? That when you're doing some good religious deed and you're dedicating it to something, to some other cause. Generally speaking, karma can only be collected by the people doing it. Okay. Generally speaking, it's against every law of karma to say that I could give you one atom of my karmic results. You know, the proof of that is very simple. If it could be done, the Buddha would have done it a long time ago, and you and me wouldn't be here. Okay. If it's possible to transfer good karma from one person to another, even the slightest bit, then the compassionate, holy, enlightened beings who have existed for countless and eons certainly would have loaned us a little bit. Okay. But it didn't happen. So in general, you can only collect karma for yourself. Now, if you are in one family, the wealth of that family is considered to be communal. For example, if a monk steals a pot from the kitchen of his own college, to use at the other side of the kitchen of that college, it's not considered breaking your vow of stealing. Because it's everybody. You can't steal what you already own. And in the case of a family's wealth, if with the agreement of everybody, you say we're going to offer these prayers for the benefit of people in the family, since the wealth is shared, the karma is shared. Insofar as everyone has agreed that the wealth could be used for a puja, then the people in that family could benefit from it, karmically.
Okay. So if you did it without them knowing?
It wouldn't be as powerful, but I believe it would still have some benefit. Mm-hmm. Excuse me? Family of what?
Karma.
Oh, in what sense do you mean? Oh, yeah. Yeah. They can. And oftentimes what's happening is very interesting. The karma of the devotion is creating the results. Okay. The karma of the devotion and the faith is creating the results. The karma of the person's devotion as they make the offering is what's causing the effect to happen. It's very interesting. It's the karma of that person's faith which is really creating the result, not the transfer of money, for example. Okay. And that's the principle of the secret teaching. That's the principle of the secret teaching. The very belief and devotion in that object is what karmically causes it to come about. Okay. The secret teachings are fully, they are also under the full power of these principles. There ain't nothing in the secret teachings which doesn't depend on the principles we've been talking about today. The secret teachings can only work because of what we've talked about today. And because of what we've talked about today, they can work. If things weren't empty, and if objects in your life were not the result of a projection on a pile of parts, the secret teachings could never work.
Is that like saying, I project, therefore it is?
No. Oh, you could say that. You could say that. Okay. I want to project, therefore it is? No. Okay. I'm being forced to have a projection, and therefore it is? Yes. Big difference. Okay. You can't say, I wish this was a hamburger, and bite into it. Okay. No. Okay. Okay. And then I'll answer that, and then we'd better. Okay.
Suppose you want to give money to a Dharma center, but in order to do that, you have to lie to the government, which you don't agree with what they're doing with their money.
Mm-hmm.
Is that okay?
No. Okay. It's a classic example of wrong livelihood to do a bad deed in order to raise money for a good cause. Can't do it. Okay, that's called dirty money. Okay, there cannot be a good result. Now, but she's talking about a gotcha, isn't she? Come on, man. There ain't no such thing as money which is a result of being clever about lying to the government. Is there? It's a gotcha. Don't forget, stop believing in those things. It's a fairy tale. It's Santa Claus. It doesn't exist. Getting money because you were clever and you tricked the government don't exist. That's not why you get the money. If the money came shortly after lying to the government, that's coincidence. Seriously. Okay? Because sometimes you lie and they catch you. Okay? It's not a cog. Wake up. Wake up. It's not a cog, you know. Some guy told me I lied for my immigrant visa, you know, and I got a green card. So what's that about? And I said, that's not why you got the green card. Because you lied, you'll be refused about 10,000 green cards in the future. If you got one, it's because you were honest in the past. Stop thinking the way things seem to be. Start thinking the way things really are. And you'll get enlightened that way. You didn't get enlightened acting the other way, did ya? let's try this one for a while. And I don't claim that the world is going to change in 3 days. It won't happen. But I do say, A, if you keep up this behavior over a certain period of time, if you stop reacting to what appears to be the case, you'll reach nirvana rather quickly. If you keep that up and do your four powers sincerely, you will reach nirvana and Buddhahood, paradise. The other way of acting hasn't worked so far. Try something else. What can you lose? The other way hasn't been bringing in anything anyway. Okay. One last question, Jay.
Yeah. Going back to the cause and result with the rug, just in a different context. Like with the holiness, and why do you leave Tibet? Why wouldn't you stay there and try to find the antidote?
He said, why did His Holiness leave Tibet? If all this stuff is true, and obviously, if His Holiness is a tantric deity, he doesn't have any bad karma left. So, why did he have to leave Tibet? A baby Buddhist answer is, okay, a baby Buddhist answer is, he left Tibet in order to teach us. Okay. He had to leave Tibet in order to get to the West so that we can learn from him. Okay. And he is Avalokiteshvara. Nothing goes wrong in his world, but he left Tibet in order to teach us. Okay. Baby Buddhist answer. A more sophisticated Buddhist answer. If we had had collectively the proper good karma, we would have been born in his country, and he would still be in that country. There would be 5,000 monasteries there, and we'd all be living this Dharma existence there. Okay. The Dalai Lama's having to run away from Tibet was created by your projections. That's your projection. We didn't have the projection to be born in a country where the Dalai Lama was also President Clinton. And he was running the country on these principles. We didn't have the good karma to pull that off. So all we can do is have this Dalai Lama who's having to run away from his dear country, thousands of monks being killed, thousands of monasteries being destroyed, because we didn't have the karma for anything else to happen. Okay. In other words, it's totally possible that everything could have had a happy ending if our karma had been right. It's not true that wealth has to be distributed among the people of the planet. If everybody was generous, everybody would have more than enough money.
That without it being the seed ripening of something in the past for them.
It is. It must be.
Okay.
It has to be.
Okay.
One more. All right. Buddhists like the hardest. Great question. Very, very nice question. Good question to end the class on. Okay. How can you use the four powers to purify our karma that you collected in the past that you have no idea what it was? It was maybe 10,000 years ago. So how do I know what to purify? There's a thing called Qishan, general confession. And that's where you need, the answer has two parts. You can do what's called a general confession. And you can say, and it goes like that, Uhu la lama dori zimba jumba la soba cho chuna shubi sangye man chandis namba tanda den genin suma na dala gomba so. And then it goes like, I confess everything I ever did. You know, I confess everything I might have ever done. So then some guys in my class in New York said, gee, that's convenient. You know, one confession, one purification, you got rid of everything you ever did. And I said, gee, it sounds like that. Let's ask somebody. And we went to this high lama in Sirat Meh, and we said, you know, does a general confession clean out all your old bad deeds, even if you don't know what they were? And he said, well, it's sort of like chipping away at a big rock, you know. And every time you do it, it chips away at a little more. But you must keep doing it. In other words, it wouldn't be bad on a daily basis to do a general confession and chip away at that big rock. Okay. Second part of the answer. If you observe carefully the sufferings in your own life, you can guess what kind of bad deeds you used to do a lot. Okay? If you examine your own life and the sufferings in your own life, your particular sufferings, and even your principal mental afflictions, like I suffer more from jealousy and desire than I do from anger. That's my personal repertoire. Okay, and each person has to examine what is their own major mental affliction and what is the biggest suffering they have in their life. Is it some kind of life-threatening thing? Well, then you must have been killing people. Is it that people don't believe you anymore? It must have been that you lied. Is it that you can never get enough money? It was because you stole. Is it that your relationships always go sour? It's because you committed sexual misconduct, etc., etc. Okay, examine the biggest problems in your own life and purify those propensities, those habits of acting that way. If you have a problem with something threatening your life, take special care to protect other people's lives. If you have a problem with lousy relationships, take special care to be faithful in your relationships. Okay, like that. If you have a problem that even when you speak the truth, people don't believe you, take great care not to lie. Take special care not to lie. Okay. That will purify it. I promised you one, right? She asked about rejoicing. And that really is the last step. I'll even sit down. And we can talk about rejoicing. In this week, by talking about, if this stuff is true, and I always say that, if this stuff is true, if the things we've said this week are true, then something has gone on this week that has not gone on in most of the rest of your life. You know, out of 365 times 43 days, in my case, which is 13,000 days something. Is it? Yeah, something like that. This is the first time I've ever had a discussion like this. The first time I've been to the Diamond Cutter Sutra, okay? Out of 12,000 days of my life, I just spent 3 or 4 talking about some kind of ideas that possibly could lead me to paradise. And that's extraordinary. I mean, it doesn't happen. It really doesn't happen. So be happy about it. You know, it is the way to paradise. Okay, it is the way to be happy. It's the only way. Okay, you have to understand emptiness. It's absolutely the only way to remove your bad thoughts. Is to understand emptiness. It's never happened before. It's a great thing, and it really is true, and it can work. You can do it. So rejoice. When you rejoice, all the power becomes much more strong. So just be happy. You know, the main thing now is the main job now is to be happy. Okay, be really happy about what happened. And the only reason we got to do it was because of our Lama. Blessing. Okay. So be happy about that, okay? So, meditate for a while. For the coffee, you know, for tea, for Tibetans, tea is like lifeblood. And give a Tibetan, you know, dairy dream for Chilamin tea. And he'd say, ew, chima. You know, and Chilamin's fake. Chilamin's artificial. And, by the way, that's another example why I should be around the Lama all the time. Because you pick up these things. It's like, rubs off on you. You know, things. Anyway. So, there is a point before you enter the Poglum, the first path, on the Bodhisattva track, where you get Bodhicitta, which is chima. You're faking it. You are forcing it. It is belabored. You know, you're trying to be a good person. It's not natural. And it's necessary. You always have to go through that stage of trying to pretend, you know, trying to get the emotion and trying to get the feeling that you really do care about all sentient beings and you want them to get enlightened. Sometimes it's called Purangi Shintabu, which means sugarcane light, sugarcane bodhicitta, meaning there's no essence in it. It's just the skin. And it's not considered hypocritical. It's a necessary step. You know, you can't just pop from not caring about people to caring about everybody. There's got to be some kind of point in between there where you're trying to do it, and it's not natural for you. That's called the Sankichima. But the measure of reaching Soglam, the first path of accumulation on the Bodhisattva track, is when you get true Sankichima, true Bodhicitta. That getting, the day you get true bodhicitta and the day you walk onto the path of accumulation is the same thing. It's the same moment. So how does this differ? This is 3 paths down from there. I mean, 2 paths down. This is path number 3. The second half of path number 3. What's the difference between that and the true bodhicitta you got to get onto path number 1?
Okay.
This is the sensation of bodhicitta in the mind of a person who just became an arya, and it's much sweeter and much different. This is the bodhicitta of a person who's just reached the first bodhisattva bhumi. And it's totally different. It's a totally different thing. And when I say sensation, what I mean is that for a certain few minutes, you have a physical sensation of this emotion of some kind of clear liquid nectar coming out of your chest area and feeding all living beings, and as that's happening, you're having the realization that you will spend the rest of your life serving other beings, and the rest of your life, you know, that from now on most of your activity is going to be directed at helping other beings.
Mm-hmm.
Like a tukku, you mean? If there's in the Abhidharma is that if you reach a certain point of concentration, you can manifest yourself as a bird or something like that. You know, you can you can send out movie pictures of yourself. And you don't even have to be a Buddhist to do that. I'm not aware of it. Put it on the list.
No.
Not sure. Haven't heard that. But I can't claim to be comprehensive. We'll go on for like another 10 minutes. Because I don't mind all night, but I know that at 9, like 20% of people want to leave, and at 9:15, like 40% want to leave. Okay, go ahead.
This is Priyanka
Bodhichitta. Yeah. Of this particular one?
Yeah, and also, or something like that, and also in meditation, in sort of normal meditation for a normal person, can you, what is it when you have some sort of experience of, that you're not yourself, I mean, not,
yeah. I mean, a lot of people, I think almost every Buddhist, American Buddhist, can talk about certain experiences that they had in meditation. And they're always wondering, did I see it or not? You know, was that it or not? You know, and because until it happens, I think, by definition, you're wondering, did it happen or not? You know, I mean, these lamas are always talking about it, and I would really like to get it. And maybe I got a little bit of it, or I had a taste of it, or maybe I really did see it and I didn't notice it, or something of that nature, okay? What I want to say is this, along with this last thought, is the absolute nyepa, meaning absolute, nailed down, total certainty that this was it. And there ain't nothing like it, and when it happens, you'll know it. And you'll never doubt it. I mean, you'll never, if something happens and you're not sure, it wasn't it. Seriously, it's totally different experience. You're a totally different being after that. And there ain't no mistaking it. You go through these steps. And you wouldn't have to ask anybody at that. No Arya would ever have to ask somebody, did I do it or not? You know. Pong. Okay. Pong Lam. The nature of it. Mm-hmm. So what are the other things? They could be flashes of that, or pre-sentiments of it or something, or They could have relevance, but if they're not, but what I'm talking about is an event that can be calculated, coldly, calculatedly planned. You know, and you could say, I want that to happen. I'm going to study the scriptures. I'm going to hear explanations from qualified people as much as I can. I'm going to get the water and the fertilizer and the sunlight, which is Guru Yoga. You know, I'm going to be near my Lama and serve him or her. And I'm going to get all the causes and conditions ready. And you can just plan it out. I mean, you can just, like a recipe for a cake, you know, you can say, I'm going to need Guru Yoga, I've got to have a touch of, study of Chicha Dak, I'm going to have to go to teachings, I'm going to have to be trying to do the six perfections, I'm going to have to be working on my compassion and everything. And you get the ingredients ready very, very calculatingly. And then it will just happen. And the point is that you can do it. You just need to have the right ingredients. They say in Buddhist philosophy that once you get the ingredients together, you couldn't prevent it. You know what I mean? You could stand there on the seed and say, don't grow, you know, and a thing would pop out, you know what I mean? Once those conditions are prepared, if you wanted to stop it at that point, you couldn't.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about that with reference to Nirvana in the next few classes. But yeah, you are forced, despite yourself, to see emptiness directly. Of course, because it's dependently originating. Yeah.
I didn't hear very well what we say over this part about emptiness between projection.
I was kind of avoiding that.
If you could speak to that a little bit.
I'll cop out. say, on the Dholam, on the second pass, all your perceptions, do you perceive emptiness on Dholam? Do you perceive emptiness on Dholam? You know? Well, you guys decide, and I'll come back later. That's what we do in the background. We're going to have a Coke or something and come back. Do you perceive emptiness on the path of preparation? Before you reach the path of seed? Not directly, but you do perceive it. You perceive it intellectually. Okay? You do perceive emptiness intellectually. Okay? And necessarily, that's through a process of projection, etc. What we said was, I forgot to say, that brings me, I remembered something that I wanted to say. What it means when you met, people ask me, do you see a guy with a bump on his head and ears and stuff like that? You know, I mean, is that what it means? Not primarily. That's not primarily what it means. It's the Dharmakaya. You are aware of having been in the presence of the ultimate reality of the Buddha. Which is part of the Buddha, which is his 90% of the Buddha, okay? So the rest is just...
If you're experiencing the Dharmakaya, the emptiness,
yeah.
Which is intellectual...
Not at this path. Yeah. Oh, by the way, it is intellectual during Jetavirsi, during the second half of the path of seeing, when you think back and say, hey, I met the Buddha. At that moment, you are... It's a projection again.
Yeah.
Not at all. No. Cannot be. Is it a projection? What? Ooh, that's a tough question. I was afraid you were going to get to that. I mean, the text would say it's not a projection at that point. Okay, at that moment. But I'm not sure that you could posit the existence of any object without... It doesn't have dependent origination. And so emptiness does have its own dependent origination, which is the fact that you are projecting it. But at that moment, I don't believe you could say that you are operating through a dunchi. Okay? And that gets a little touchy. So let's leave it as emptiness as you think about emptiness. Okay? Otherwise, the emptiness perceived by the first half of the path of seeing would not have dependent origination, and then it couldn't be an object. So I'm not going to get too deep into it. You do not perceive that emptiness through any kind of cursive thinking. You're not thinking to yourself, oh, hey, this is emptiness or something like that. Yeah, I know. I wish I... It's pure, direct perception. Water poured in water. Yeah. Oh, and I want to say one more thing. The moment you see emptiness directly, you become two of the three jewels. Okay? You become, from that moment on, two of the objects, two of the three ratnas. You become the refuge of the entire universe. You become two out of the three. Not bad. All right? It's very interesting. You know, when people, when Buddhists all over the world are doing their Sangye Jiran, Sangye Jiran, you're the one they're talking about. Okay? It's you that they're... Once you have realized emptiness directly and become an Arya, you are two of the objects of refuge. You are two of the three objects of refuge. And by the way, number three, which is the jewel of the Buddha. Oh, by the way, why are you the refuge of Sangha? Why are you the jewel of Sangha, by the way, which is not the same as Sangha, right? You know that. The refuge of the Sangha and the Sangha are not the same thing. The refuge of Sangha, the thing you take refuge in, Buddha Dhamma Sangha, the jewel or the ratna of Sangha is anyone who's seen emptiness directly. Definition. So you're already into that group. You're already graduating into that group. The ratna of Dhamma, the refuge of the Dhamma, consists primarily and not exclusively of the direct perception of emptiness. So you've already reached number two. Dharma and Sangha. You've got Dharma and Sangha. You are what people are taking refuge in from that moment on. Now, what about Buddha? The main Buddha refuge, primary Buddha refuge, is the Dhammakaya. So you ain't that yet, but you just met it. You're very close to it. So really, you become like 2.5 objects of refuge from that moment on. It's pretty cool. You are what the world is taking refuge in. Why? You know, what's this? How do you get protection from seeing emptiness directly? Yeah, because now you've got the main weapon to stopping mental switches. Okay? And in the case of the yelling boss, who I get to go back to, I'm already starting to get geared up. Or should I say wound up? I don't know. I'm already thinking whether I should go in on Tuesday or not. I think I can say I was flying or something. How does it protect you in the case of the yelling boss? It's a big deal. How does it protect you? He's still yelling at you. Empty or not, he's the same screaming boss. You won't react. What better protection? That is protection. That is taking refuge. You don't take refuge in the morning in front of your altar. You take refuge when you don't respond to the screaming boss because you understand his emptiness. That's refuge. Why does that protect you? It protects you from something in the future. Screaming bosses. And incidentally, helps you to knock out your mental switches. That's protection. That's the only protection. There ain't some dude who can reach down from the sky and say, no more bad bosses in the future for Michael Roach, you know. He's had enough. Yeah, 15 years of bad bosses. You know, it's not like that. The protection is your own knowledge of the emptiness of the three spheres, of the boss yelling at you. You don't respond, and then you don't have to meet bad bosses in the future, and then incidentally, you'll start to remove your mental afflictions by that practice, and then ultimately, as the bad karmas wear out, you will be forced into Buddha paradise. Let's stop there. Really? You're going to break it at that point? Okay, go ahead. Better be good. I honestly, it's important. I wasn't kidding last night. And that was an appropriate last thing to say. And I wasn't just joking around. There's a very important point, and it's one of the realizations that happens, is that when I become a Buddha, they won't call me Mike anymore. What's the point of that? Think about it. Think about it. It's an extremely important point, and it is a discrete realization at that point. It's an important realization at that point. It has to do with projection. Okay.
Is it negative or is it positive? Do you know what they will call you, or do you know that they will call you?
No, it's negative. Okay. Maybe it means that when they meet your Dhammakaya in the future, it won't be through a process of mistaking the Dunji for the Dhammakaya. Because at that time, and that answers your question about, you know, is there a Dunji involved with emptiness? You know, is there a projection involved with emptiness? Whether or not there is, at that moment, you are no longer mistaking the projection for the real thing. Mm-hmm. Okay. When you perceive emptiness intellectually, it's through a dunchi.
So you can act up that place at will. From then on.
No.
No. I mean, like, in the fact of the dispensation, when you come out of it and all that,
yeah.
And you live in day to day,
yeah.
You have the distinction.
Well, you could
continuing your meditation.
Yeah, but you don't. But you don't necessarily have that experience again very soon. It's close, but most of your perceptions of emptiness, even on the path of habituation, are intellectual again. Okay. No, and that's very useful in the case of the screaming boss. You can't go into deep meditation while your boss is screaming. He won't sign the paycheck next week. Michael Rice went cataleptic during the while screaming at him, you know. You know. Yeah. 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 Yeah, you're aware that he's not what he sees to you. You know that you're wrong. At least you know you're wrong. You're still wrong, but at least you know it. Okay, that's Jimatabo. That means what? That's the illusion. Yeah, okay. Let's meditate for like 5 minutes, okay? I think just meditate. Have some yiran. Have some rejoice. You know, we are flirting with the destruction of your mental affliction, you know. It's a very cool place to be flirting, you know. We are dancing around the subject, the only subject that can remove your mental afflictions forever and make you truly contented forever. And that would be really nice, you know. This whole thing of going through the day swinging between liking people and disliking people, and not in a major way, but just this continual struggle of going down the street with like and dislike grabbing at you and beating you up as you walk down the street, you know, it'll be over. And your mind will be in a place where you just happy all the time. So be happy right now. I mean, rejoice that we are flirting with the weapon for the destruction of the mental affliction, you know? And it's very rare to have the opportunity, and it's rare that a group of people would sit in one place and talk about these things. Extremely rare. Especially in an accurate way. So rejoice. Just be happy for a while. It enhances the merit immensely. Okay.